Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps. It's me, Jody, and today I am here bringing you the best and the best of the worst moments from 90 Day Fiancé Before the 90 Days, Unexpected, Married at First Sight, and a little recap of my weekend in the OC. You're going to have to head on over to patreon.com/realitytvpod for the real dirt and my take on the OC lifestyle, including how I ran into, or I should say, accidentally stalked Lizzie Rosbeck's soon-to-be ex-husband that was in my hotel. It's really disgusting and it's really juicy. And also lots of other stuff. Trust me, it's going to be a really good episode. You can also see some of the photos I'll be referring to on my Instagram and Twitter at Reality TV Pod, and also in the Facebook group, Reality TV Orchard of Snark. Now, to the lovely ladies who came out to see me Friday night, I absolutely adore you. We talked so much shit from 90 Day Fiancé. Larissa, who's in our Facebook group, she gave me some really good down low information on Jesse and Darcy. You're going to have to, bribe it out of her, but my lips are sealed. Then we had, my girl Audrey, she was giving me some information on the ladies of the OC. Heather Dubrow and Shannon Bedore used to live in her neighborhood. She has seen some stuff. And then Melissa, first of all, I am still thinking about those photos of your dad. He's just absolutely adorable. She had some incredible intel on, I'm not going to be too specific. Don't worry, Melissa. She's got some really, really good information on a certain couple. I'm not even going to give this show. Not going to say it here publicly because I don't want her to get in trouble, but trust me, it was pretty freaking good. I can only think Evelyn's heavenly bounty from Claremont was shining above me that night. And for that, thank you one, thank you all who came out. Then Saturday, wow. When I tell you that Troy from Taste of Reality podcast and the amazing tasteofreality.com, you got to go check it out if you haven't been there. He knows how to plan events around reality TV. And I sincerely mean that with every fiber of my being. First of all, Troy is just the most friendly, down-to-earth, welcoming person. I was totally starstruck meeting him because, you know, I listened to his voice and then seeing his super handsome face in person, I was just totally nervous, but he's so nice, made me feel so comfortable, and I was just super lucky to take part in the day. Now, I need to take a moment to really set the scene. You know, first of all, I don't know California geography, and I'm directionally challenged as it is. So when Siri told me that I arrived and I was in the middle of a road next to a highway, I was just about to like pull over, bury myself a hole, and just wait for the buzzards to come and eat me to my death. But I was able to find a little office parking lot and did a little research on Google. And that's where I learned that this ropes course is actually in the middle of an RV park. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe this is just how California rolls. So let's just woohoo, whoop it up. Let's get there. Let's have a good time. So I find the place. I pull in. You had to like park your car to the side and then go walk in to check in to get past the little gate thing. And I felt like I was in the exact same office as in the movie Vacation, like the original Vacation. And I was further convinced because like along the roadway are all these little cabins. Remember when Clark and Ellen, they stayed at the little cabins, the same place where, what's his face? Bill Murray's brother played like the innkeeper. You know what I'm talking about, right? Where Clark ties Dinky onto the bumper and he accidentally leaves him on there. Okay, that place. The cabins are straight out of the movie. I swear it was filmed there. But then, even after that, the day really started coming together because I see the ropes course ahead, pull in. It's totally surrounded by tents, RVs, people grilling. You know, you didn't see any of this on TV. You didn't see the no less than a dozen feral children riding around on rusted bikes. And I swear, I'm not making this up, I swear there was this one little chubby girl, like a little chubby Jody, riding around on a Razor scooter that I donated to Goodwill last year. I swear to God, hey, I'm happy someone's using it. But there, to my left, 9 o'clock, a Renaissance Fair encampment. I am not kidding. I took photos. You know I did. There were some kind of common folk, Ren Fair people, a few, you know, your basic wenches. I'm pretty sure there was like a blacksmith or two. One of the woman folk broke character though, and I gotta hold her feet to the flame because she thought no one was looking, but you know I was. She opened up her skirt to try to kind of like air out, cool off, and I saw basketball shorts underneath. Now, I'm not going to say anything to the town crier, but I'm just saying she didn't fully commit. Now, mind you, no one else has arrived. I think I even put a little call out for help in the Facebook group just in case I was never seen again. I didn't know if I was even in the right place, but it didn't matter because I had a front row seat to the king, queen, and two knights rounding the corner of one of the Renaissance Fair tents. Now later, our ropes guy told us that they were choosing a new king and queen that day. So I really did have like front row seats. It was the best day of my life. So more on the ropes course. Troy and his partner Hector arrived. They're the sweetest, like I said, most welcoming people. So cute. Then more fans of Troy's podcast and Danny Pellegrino's podcast arrived, as well as some of their friends. And then Danny arrived and we did some fireball shots because, of course, I mean, you got to do fireball. Thank you for bringing those, Troy. And then really with no real instruction, instructor Sean, the same one who instructed the ladies on the OC, told us to just put on a harness. And then my favorite part, there's a whole pile of helmets over there. And I'm like, okay, going for a helmet. He's like, oh, no, you don't really need a helmet. And I'm like, what, are you sure? And he's like, nah, you'll be fine. Okay. I mean, I guess at that point we sign the releases. He doesn't give a shit because, you know, we can't sue him anyway. So we need less gear for him to have to clean later. Now, at this point, you guys know me. I have to find allies. I have to find new best friends wherever I go. It's just what I do. And that's when I found Christina and Lauren. Christina actually thought that Lauren and I knew each other and that we were friends before we got there, but you know, no, that's just how I cling on to people and talk to them like they're my therapist within 5 minutes of meeting. But honestly, it was just so cool to just find other women and support each other and cheer each other on the course. It was terrifying, not gonna lie. I think I looked it up and it was like 60 feet or something like that. It was absolutely terrifying. It was no joke. There was one part on the course, and I don't know how to describe it. It was like a ropes ladder. They were like little suspended logs. I don't know. It was not the owl my finger part. I'll have to find a picture of it, but it was just so freaking hard and scary. Oh, that's what she said, hard and scary. But I just kept telling myself, if I could birth 4 babies, I could conquer this bitch. And come to find out, Vicky was the only one who actually finished the course. Sean was saying that Oprah has actually been there. Other shows, other reality shows have been there, but they have booms and people that'll take them up and take them down. And then Sean and I had a little moment before I head up the ropes. And, you know, he said I reminded him of his wife because his wife's name is Judy. My name's Jody. Had a little thing, and I'm like, oh, my sister's name are Julie and Jill. My mom's called me Judy. We don't even have a Judy. Ha ha. We had a moment. And then I was feeling like, okay, we're close. So I kind of whispered and asked him, who's the worst housewife that was here? And that's when he said that I reminded him of Vicky. And I said, how could you, Sean? I thought we had a moment. And then he said that he actually liked Vicky the most. But guess who he thought was the worst? Shannon Bador. Yeah, he said that she complained on and off camera and she was kind of rude. So this burst my little Shannon bubble because who doesn't like Shannon Bador? Well, that leads us to the quiet woman later. Now, I got there a little late because I don't know how to parallel park. I realized as I was posting a Facebook Live later, a little bit about what went down, that I really think that me breaking the driving simulator back in driver's ed. And my driver's ed teacher, this is not a lie, he told me, you're never going to get parallel parking. You're not going to learn it. Just don't ever live downtown in a city. Just make sure you have a driveway. And you know what? I listened to that. But all of that happened for a reason. I have been preparing my whole life. Had I known how to parallel park, had I not had to just circle around those Newport Beach blocks until I could find a spot to pull into, I would not have been late and I would not have gotten the seat at the end of the table. Because Troy, that goddamn miracle of a man, had arranged to have Emily and Gina, the new women on The Real Housewives of Orange County, come to the Quiet Woman that night. They walk in. I will give more details on Patreon, but I gotta tell you, honest to God, you guys know I don't bullshit. They're stunning in person. They were really honestly beautiful. A lot of hair, a lot of eyelashes, but I was loving it. They smelled like roses, maybe a dash of juniper mixed in there. Delightful. No, I'm gonna have to save some of this good stuff for Patreon, but I need to go on the record that if Gina comes out with a line of toilet seats for public restrooms targeted for, aimed for children and their parents, I'm just saying that we workshopped it together. I will give it to her, much like Luann gave Bethany the skinny girl margarita credit. Well, we all know it was Bethany, but you know what I'm saying. It's a good analogy. I just think, Gina, I doubt you're listening, but if you are, I think you got a real gold mine on your hands. Now, mid-parenting tips for moms of little boys, which Gina and I were comparing notes on, in walks Shannon Bedore. Yep. And when I tell you that the Quiet Woman turned into Elsa's ice castle, like as if ice were shooting out of the daggers she was staring, I mean it. It's kind of like, you know that nightmare where like you walk into PE class and you're naked and everyone stops and they're staring at you. And even in your nightmare, you could hear just like the buzz of white noise in the air. That's exactly what it felt like, except it wasn't quiet. Everyone just screamed a collective, Shannon! And in that moment, Shannon turns to her boyfriend, who was a very bronzed, unbuttoned a little bit too much, maybe a little Botox. And she said, I'm not doing this. And the look on her face was how she looked at, remember that prime rib she ordered on her birthday at the gastropub where David brought her on her birthday and she was none too pleased? Picture that times like 17. Total disdain and disgust. And then Troy had a moment with her. You got to go listen to his podcast and the conversation that they had because it's really interesting. It's Taste of Reality. But mind you, Gina and Emily were sitting at our table talking with all of our backs were to Shannon. So they didn't know that Shannon had responded like that specifically about them. So they got up because we all turned and were like, Shannon. So then they turned again. They didn't see her say, I'm not doing this. And they went up, gave her hugs, said hello. And then they came and sat back down. And it was Christina and Lauren and I that were like, oh, wow, that was dark. You could feel that in the air. And Gina was like, what? What are you talking about? And then we told her about Shannon's reaction. And then Gina turned to Emily, was like, told Emily what had happened. And I will just say that those of us at that table now know the real Shannon, not only what we heard about her from Gina and Emily, but we also saw it play out right before our very eyes. Now, some may think it was like Shannon just had a bad day. She didn't want to, you know, be in the public eye, but I'm going to have Christina or Lauren, I've already talked to them about this, they're going to have to come on here on the podcast and give you their take too. It was much more than that. It was a very, it's hard for me to say because honestly, I was like Shannon's biggest fan and defender. I would have wanted to meet her over Dorinda. Okay, that level, you get me. But her response was just so immature and like the selfish air about her. And it did. It broke my heart. The Shannon bubble burst. She's just one of these people that her mood, it just has like a dark energy or something around her. There's no other way to describe it, then you just had to be there. Now, like I said, a lot more on that night on Patreon this week. And once again, I just gotta shout out Troy here. You are a treasure. You are the real deal. Totally lucky to have met another podcaster in this crazy world that we are in who is genuine and who is the real deal, busting their ass with the rest of us. I'm just putting it out there, Troy. Maybe we need to plan a little Taste of Reality trip to Andalays. Just throwing it out to the universe. Okay, now what you are here for, 90 Day Fiancé before the 90 days. Let's start off with Angela and Michael. They're my favorite to start out with. Right off the bat, Angela is about to stab Michael over her damn cigarettes. I don't smoke, but you know what? I get it because she's hot. She's sweaty. She can't find anything to wear. We have all been there. And then you just throw nicotine withdrawal and someone telling you what to do on top of that. Yeah, I mean, you get Angela with her clip-on ponytail hanging from a chandelier. Now, I don't think Michael is trying to be purposely mean to her. I think he's just trying to tell her to have common sense in a country that is more conservative norms on how you dress in public or when you're meeting people for the first time. But then as Angela says, I don't know nothing about your culture. Nothing. She also doesn't know how double negatives work, but also she knows her way around the internet. I mean, she met Michael on it. You don't think she could have, you know, Googled information about Nigerian culture before she left or even spring for like $8 for the in-flight Wi-Fi to just figure it out. She had plenty of hours to decipher this shit before she got there. So she changes her tank top because Michael is very uncomfortable with the amount of cleavage that she had. So she goes from one layered tank with exposed cleavage to a shirt with slightly less cleavage and a cold shoulder arm cutout that said flawless. So Michael is just like, sure. Let me just straighten your hair for you. He says that he's doing this because he likes to take care of his women. But I think we all know he's just tired of Angela doing her hair wrong. Because he's like, okay, come here, girl. Give me some of that straightening serum. Let's go slow and steady down the hair shaft. He definitely knew what he was doing. That's not the first time that he straightened some hair. But Angela doesn't take this gesture as kind and loving. I think she is just tired of being hot and sweaty, and she's just irritable as hell because she just berates him endlessly for everything he does. And that's when it came to me that it's like, okay, you know what? God, what does this remind me of? Where have I seen this? Oh, I know, with myself, because it's like a mother whose husband has been gone for weeks on business trips and she's 1 hour away from bedtime and that glass of wine and her housewives on TV, she is just done. And then all my dreams came true because I remember last week when I talked about Tarek getting into that little pedicab. Yeah, remember that? And remember I said, oh, thank God Angela didn't have to get into one of those because she would have hulked it and flipped it over like Teresa Giudice. Well, happy Merry Christmaka birthday to me because it's happening. It's all happening. Angela gets in, and I think even Michael was holding his breath because he's like, oh, put your foot in there, squeeze in. And he was kind of flinching like, oh, please, God. He might have even made the sign of the cross, like, please let her fit. And they managed to get her in on a good angle. They're angled in a very Nicole and as in fashion in the back. They fit. We'll just leave it at that. And you know, here's the thing about Michael. It's really hard because I feel badly for him because Angela is just taking out all her insecurities on him. And I think he's being sweet to her and incredibly patient, especially when they arrive at that outdoor bar where once again, Angela is pissed because Michael didn't turn the air conditioning on for Nigeria. She has his friends when they arrive and then just gets straight to the point faster than Miami homicide on a vintage episode of the first 48, right? She just gets right to the point and says, does Michael have any girlfriends? Or should I say, does Michael have any girlfriends? Now, they reassure her that he doesn't, but also that she needs to know that African men like to be in charge in their relationships. Well, that ain't happening. Okay, so much for compromise, huh, Ange? Now, am I the only one that really likes Michael's friends? I think they're really supportive. I think they're good guys. That David, Peter the Patriot wearing the American flag shirt, and Addis. Especially that David on the end, kind of cute. And he was the one who asked the question where I had to pause it because sometimes I like to play this game where I try to guess what the person's answer or what the person's response is going to be before I actually see it. And David, my new boyfriend, asks, what is it about Angela that turns you on? I guessed he would say, she supports me and she loves me. But I was totally wrong. He says, I believe she's gonna provide for me, take care of me, make me comfortable. Well, there we have it. He's in it for a life in America. Shocking. Not quite. Again, it's this back and forth feeling I have for Michael because clearly he just wants to get here. But on the other hand, he is having to deal with Angela. So let's fast forward to this day trip to, I think you pronounce it, Lakey Conservatory. And of course, Angela is in frickin' Nigeria and she's eating pizza in the car. She's the reason why places like a Chili's or an Applebee's exist in Times Square, or the Pizza Hut next to the pyramids in Egypt, right? Now this canopy walk, talk about perfect timing coming off that OC ropes course. Angela is on a Vicky Love Tank high, making similes and metaphors about their communication and the bridge. And she wasn't too far off because she did say it was, quote, all downhill smooth sailing after this part. I think the guide just was about to like cut the bridge loose and just jump himself down to the jungle after having to stand there and listen to Angela belittle and snap at Michael like he was a child. It was the worst place to have this conversation. I mean, we wanted it to happen on camera, but I felt bad for the guide. But on the same hand, Michael is more and more outspoken as we go on about just wanting to please Angela just enough to get himself to the States. So I don't have too much sympathy for him anymore. I do have sympathy for Angela because I don't know if she knows that her braided rat tail went out of style with her last birth control prescription. Now, speaking of needed birth control, let's talk about Rachel and John. Rachel and my little teapot are going out to meet his friends, also known as LeFou and Cogsworth. Yep, you know the blonde one's LeFou, brunette Cogsworth, and baby Lucy is being babysat by Mrs. Potts tonight. Just kidding. I actually think their names were something like Daniel and Jack, although John, I swear, called them like Tug or Tuck and Turtle. Don't know if I was the only one that heard that, but either way, I'm just going to go with LeFou and Cogsworth. It suits them better, especially because they were wearing suits. I actually appreciated that gesture. It was like very British gents. So Rachel, John, LeFou, and Cogs are having a beer together. And John says they met on an app and then they got gooey and then fell in love. Bibbidi-bobbidi-boo. But Rachel isn't just there to look at how handsome my Cogsworth is. Sorry. She also wants to know about John's past. Now, LeFou's it and starts going into John's womanizing and pissing and fighting, but Cogs cuts him short and says that they're there to try to reassure Rachel that John is just short and stout and full of sugar, much like a teapot is. So later, along the John explains that he was just young. He used to react out of anger to other people's anger, and all of his charges were assault. You know, those 50 or 60 fights. It's under the bridge that they're sitting next to, right? Well, no. Think about that. 50 or 60 fights. That's more fights than anyone I know altogether. I don't even think I know anyone who's actually been in a physical altercation like that. Well, between these 50 and 60 fights, he's only had 5 convictions. I mean, if you're going on just like ratio percentage-wise, I guess you could say he's winning. But the most serious of one of these fights was one that he got into with another student when he was at university, also known as uni. He explains it as, "I punched a group of guys in the face." Now, I know I shouldn't have laughed at this part, but I mean, it's just funny to say, "I punched a group of guys in the face." No, he didn't just punch one guy. He punched literally the whole group. The whole group each got a punch in the face. I don't know why I think it's funny. It was just the way he said it. It's not funny that he punched people. No, he was arrested and convicted of bodily harm without intent. And he says the victim sustained an eye injury. I would love to know what that eye injury is. Does it mean like the person lost vision, their eyeball popped out? It must have been something pretty serious, right? Well, he didn't go to prison. He was kicked out of school, uni, and he said he paid for it massively. Even knowing all of this and having 2 young children, Rachel thinks that he is a changed man, and she just makes him promise that he's not going to get into any trouble again. And that's when we cue the sunset setting in their eyes. Aww. Well, let's fast forward to Ricky and Melissa, because that one turned from an aww to an ooh. Ricky. He still has not heard from Melissa, and there's another day, another restaurant spent in emotional purgatory. But you know what? Ricky's going to change that. You see, now he's not in Colombia for Melissa. It's for the sights. Yes, the sights. That's what he came here to see. But the thing is, he wants to experience the sights and the culture with someone. See you guys. And it's just, you know, by chance that Ricky happened to be talking with someone else while he was talking to the love of his life and future stepmother to his children, Melissa. And her name is Jimena, and she has sparkles behind her eyes. I really think she should get that checked out because it sounds pretty damn painful. Jimena is much more beautiful than Melissa. Her photos were stunning. I like to think that Melissa is like Walmart Kardashian club wear, whereas Jimena is a Target Knox and Rose. See the difference? Now, in anticipation for Jimena's arrival, Ricky has gone all 1993. He's got red roses, 3 bottles of red wine, candles, and red rose petals. And then he goes and he puts the rose petals on the futon. Ricky, those stain. This is like right out of Larry's playbook. Like, God damn it, Ricky. And then he sits on the rose petals. He is not going to be getting his Airbnb deposit back. That is for damn sure. Ricky's insecurity, it makes me realize how annoying I must be when I talk about my insecurities, because all he's worried about is his height, where I'm more worried about the stain guard or lack thereof on the futon. And he's changing his shoes. He's drinking wine thinking, I don't know, it's like Jack and the Beanstalk, like magic juice, or is that Alice in Wonderland? Like all of a sudden he's just going to grow a couple inches. But there she is, Jimena. And she really is beautiful in person. I think she's beautiful and cute, seemingly sweet. And then she says Ricky came here to meet her, and there was like a moment that I know we all did, because Ricky, how the hell can you be this scuzzy? I mean, do you think that Ricky and producers are just springing a fast one on us? Do you think this was the plan all along? I was thinking it was, because it seemed just way too seamless to be last minute. But scenes for next week did make it seem like Ricky was keeping Jimena a big secret from everyone. Okay, you ready for this one? Go get your steak knife and your steak, cut it on a bias, because we're talking about Darcy and Jesse. These two, oh God, these two. Nothing says relaxing like sitting on someone's lap as they're trying to enjoy a cup of coffee, enjoying the view. I like Darcy more than I like Jesse. I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't like either of them. But if I had to choose, I'd choose Darcy. But when she was sitting on his lap, my gut instinct, my reflex was just to like take my foot and just like kick her ass off his lap. Who does that? It's not relaxing. Normal people don't do that. And then we have Jesse sitting there. I mean, he sure does like staring at nature and making comments, doesn't he? It's really beautiful, babe. That's going to have to be our next square on a bingo card, right? It's really beautiful. He thinks he's so deep and moody when he says shit like that. Remember he was saying in the car last week too, oh, Connecticut, it's really beautiful, the forest. It makes me want to just like throw him in like gladiator style with Evelyn and just make them out-mood each other. Ugh. So this morning porch session ends up turning into a standoff suddenly over a grocery list. I mean, I thought making a grocery list was just an exclusive thing in my house that becomes annoying and cumbersome, but fuck me. This was like a whole new level of what the fuck just happened. Because all Darcy asks is, hey, what do you want to do for dinner? And JVP could not be more rude and dismissive of her. He just wants to like stay home, chill out, let his burnt off bangs grow back in peace on the porch. He's got his headband on, so maybe the roots are getting fresh air and vitamin D, and he just wants Darcy to go on her merry way and leave him the fuck alone. Darcy gets pissed. She storms off in her leather shorts. Yeah, let me repeat that. Leather shorts. And waits on the front porch for Jesse to finish his coffee. So I'm like, oh, what the fuck is going on? I thought you were going on your own, but no, she's waiting. They have this unspoken understanding. It's so fucking bizarre. So before we know what happens next, they're already on their way to the grocery store like nothing the hell just happened. I've seen some scary ass movies with this exact same dynamic. And you know what movie comes to mind? Sleeping with the Enemy, and we know how that ends. Now, once at the store, Darcy stocks up on lettuce, and I was kind of flinching, just waiting for Jesse to snap about buying too much iceberg. But then he goes over to the dessert section, which was pretty weak, by the way, and he gets all mushy about carrot cake. Maybe carrot cake is really, truly irresistible to everyone. I thought it was just me. No raisins, though, in the carrot cake. Put that on the record. Save your raisins for Raisin Bran Crunch, which is also a delicious cereal. But by the way, it has more calories than carrot cake. Believe it or not, that's actually true. But anyway, off to the meat counter where they order and wrap up half a cow. And I saw Jesse's eyes light up when he saw those things, and it kind of scared me. Like, he appreciates the butchering it took. You feeling me? Well, Jesse doesn't feel anything at all towards Darcy's kids, and we know that because he could not have shot down the possibility of him being their father any faster. Did you hear that? When he's like, oh no, it's her children, not mine. Even the butcher was taken aback, like, okay, just trying to be nice, make conversation while I weigh this stuff. I'm not doing the math on your age, man. Well, let's fast forward to dinner time. Jesse really has no idea how to talk to teenagers or anyone, but he was talking to them like they were toddlers. It was, oh God, he thought he was doing a great job, but it was totally uncomfortable. He's like trying to give them high fives and stuff like that. And the idiot that he is, he thinks he's all in, right? But he also says that he feels like an outsider, to which I say, yeah, it's kind of because you are, because they are mother and daughters. They have a bond, you stupid douchebag. I mean, Darcy's daughter did a better job at trying to relate and engage and understand the relationship between her mom and Jesse than Jesse could even pretend to have with them. Now, Jesse is a sociopath, and we see that when he lashed out over the steak and the rice. The guy just needs mental help. It's all there is to it. I would be afraid to be alone with him. I would be afraid to be in public with him. And to be honest, I'm even afraid to be talking about him right here on this podcast because he has the ability to destroy things, possibly set things on fire from afar. I just know there's evil inside the man. Okay, let's do Paul and Carini. All right, let's get them out of the way here. I'm saying that because I am still of the belief that Carini is so obviously pregnant. She's gained weight, her boobs are bigger, she's wearing a peplum top to hide her stomach, and she's already kind of waddling down the street while holding on to Paul. And Paul is still bitching and complaining about doing all the chores, so poor Siri gets brought into it. Not only was Carini laughing at Paul, which I thoroughly enjoyed, but so was Siri. Not only will I take care of the baby, you are an idiot. I swear I heard Siri bust out a laugh in there. But it's not over. There's back and forth. Paul says that he just talks loudly, and then Carini says, "No, you scream and yell, so." Now, I do think Carini is kind of lazy. She's probably used to her mom cleaning up after her because she did just turn 21. She's been living at home. But you know what? Paul comes from the same exact thing. He's 34, and this is likely the first time that he's had a cleanup after himself, too. So let's fast forward to a meeting with Carini's parents and a translator. Her parents are really worried about all of the disagreements that Paul and Carini continue to have. They're arguing, and they're only a week away from getting married. Paul says he understands their concern, and Carini says that she's happy with Paul when they're not fighting. But Paul does get stressed too easily, and then he starts yelling and screaming. Now, finally, Carini's mom says what we have all been saying since last season. They need to learn each other's language. You cannot be married and communicate about anything of significant value if you can't even carry on a simple exchange. It will never, ever work if you can't communicate on even the most basic level. Now that's when Carini breaks down crying and says Paul isn't always this nice to her, like he is in front of her parents, and probably means the cameras too. Now, when they're not around, when the cameras aren't around, he bans her from talking to people. And holy shit, Carini's parents look like they wanted to set Paul's house on fire for him. Her dad was swallowing hard, his jaw was clenched, and I was hoping that he would just do like a roundhouse punch, if that is something, a roundhouse kick, roundhouse punch, something to Paul's stupid patchy beard. He's got to clean that thing up. Now that's when the translator looked like he was about to start crying too, because he's still having to translate what Carini's saying in tears. All eyes are on Paul. Carini's mom is choking back tears. And Paul just says, "Oh, I don't mean to ban her from everything and anyone. It's just romantic conversations." Now that doesn't totally track to me. Paul doesn't seem like the most open or understanding person. He doesn't really get it. Even if Carini was making comments on Instagram accounts of male models or fitness models or whatever, it doesn't mean that she is cheating on him. She's just saying like, "Wow, looks good." I've said it before, I don't think any of these fitness models are going to be flying down and taking a boat down the Amazon to go cheat with Carini for a night and then fly back. I mean, it's so fucking ridiculous. And Paul is controlling. That's all he ever knows. He's got a helicopter mom, and now he is a helicopter boyfriend. Now it continues. It gets worse. Carini says Paul yells at her, then leaves her there crying. And Paul doesn't deny any of it. He says he does it, but he also says Carini is just young and she's still learning. To that I say, fuck you, Paul. Just because you're older than her doesn't mean that you are better at relationships. Okay, now I can't bear to talk about this stupid love story in the restaurant later because it's pointless. Of course they're going to work it out. So instead, I'm just going to pose a question to you that's been bouncing around this vapid brain of mine. Do you think Paul and Carini chose the Siri voice that they prefer to hear in their own language? Or did Paul pick the voice that he prefers to speak to him? Or is it just one voice that's a default? Do you know what I mean? Like, I think I would want, like, if Dave and I spoke different languages, I would want my little Siri voice for Dave to be like a male Australian guy, maybe a South African accent. Yeah, that would be my go-to. Totally dreamy. But if I got to choose my Siri accent to represent me for my foreign fiance, I think I would go for like a very sweet Southern girl accent, or maybe like an Australian girl too. Because that's, yeah, Australia is probably like a safe bet to go. Well, with all this important talk out of the way, let's get to the wedding planning. Despite Karini's mom being totally opposed to it, oh, my heart was breaking. This woman knows that her daughter is making a mistake. She knows that Paul's not the man of Karini's dreams, but she's forced to just watch Karini jump into something that she has no idea about. Just the sadness in her eyes. Oh, it's too much. But they pick a dress, and I think they all know, even the wedding dress lady, that Karini's pregnant, because they pick certain dresses that are like stomach conscious, and Karini keeps touching her stomach as if to check how things are feeling and how things are looking. I just sure hope that she's thought about how that baby is going to be feeling and looking like, because with Paul jeans, I don't know. All right, let's talk about Tarek and Hazel. Back from church, and Tarek's joking around about going, and Hazel very reluctantly gives him a kiss. But no time to spare, because our voice of reason and Tarek's brother Dean arrives, as well as Tarek's new evening look. I don't know what to say. Is it mesh? Is it stretchy? Is it one size fits all? The only thing I do know is that Angela is probably jealous that she doesn't already own this herself, because it's full coverage, but plenty of airflow, but it's quite the look. Tarek warns Hazel that Dean is very protective of him, even though he is the little brother. But no worries, he will be there to support her and help her through this meeting. And then we see Dean. He's maybe had a beer or two, and he doesn't hold back. I don't know if I really like that or not at this point, because he did ask some very good targeted questions, and Hazel did hesitate. She did admit that she is fresh out of a relationship, and I think Dean really has valid concerns, like anyone would for their family member jumping into any relationship so quickly. I thought it was very suspicious that when Dean asked Hazel about her son, Hazel smiled and looked down when she said that he's at his father's. It's the same thing she did when she said something about her ex. Now, as a mother myself, I wouldn't be smiling if someone was asking me about a painful or sore subject about my child. But I might be smiling if I was busted and trying to hide something, like that uncomfortable smile. So I'm wondering if Hazel does have an ex, the ex being the father of her son. I think maybe she was seeing if Tarek, this guy from America, could offer her something more for her son and herself, and if she did have feelings towards him once he got here, and she'd leave her ex, take off with her son, and start this better life. But now Tarek is here. She really doesn't have natural, organic feelings towards him. So now she just wants to go back home with her son, and her, I don't know if it's her husband or her not-so-ex are staying, because we see her storm off down the street, and she won't go back to Tarek. We'll see what happens next week. But up next, let's talk about some TLC's Unexpected. We're back for another week with these unexpected parents. Let's start out with Laura and Tyler. Lucas has been born, and they are heading home, but not before they needed the little checkout procedure that most hospitals do. A nurse will go outside with you, make sure you get the car seat in correctly. But it didn't go so smoothly because Tyler has a gas can in the back seat directly next to the car seat. The nurse, I thought she was about to just like take off and run with the baby, just like take the prison sentence just for the cause. She was horrified. These two, I worry. Laura says it's just so cool because he like depends on us, but it's like when he cries, he needs me. Hand to the freaking forehead. All of us parents know that she's going to be crying to herself very soon when that baby starts crying for her because all you want is 2 hours of uninterrupted sleep, but the baby just wants you. And Tyler is so immature. He likes to say what kind of parent he's going to be, which is completely laughable. If you watch this episode, you know exactly what I'm going to say. He's all about, you know, he thinks he could write a parenting book. He's not going to be too strict. He's going to let their kids make mistakes unless, you know, they're going to do coke or something like that. And then, ooh, is your mom going to make us pizza pasta? Yes. Okay. Yeah. That's when Laura says, yeah, baby Lucas, he brought a lot of love into our family. It's like when we got our dog. Honey, no, please don't. This is not like bringing home a dog or a new American Girl doll baby. It's alive. It's not going to bark when it needs to go out. Please don't equate the two. No. Now then, we got to talk about Anna because this storyline keeps coming up over and over again. I'm really honestly bored of it. Her sister Anna is not bonded to Lucas and everyone's all worried about it. Listen, she's 15. At 15, I personally would have loved to have had a little baby niece or nephew, but I am a kid person. I love babies. I don't want any more of my own, but I love being around kids. But perhaps Anna is not that type of kid. I don't really think it matters, nor do I think this is going to be a long-term problem. She's going to bond with her nephew. She's just 15. Let her just act like a 15-year-old. Now let's talk about Chloe, who's 16. She is 15 going on 16 and parenthood. And she's also going to plan her baby shower. And here comes Max. Again. He's at the house all the freaking time, so much so that this kid is having his mail sent to Chloe's house. Hell freaking no. Chloe's mom is not having it. I'm not having it. No way would I want some kid's credit history being pulled up with my address. No freaking way. That is so ballsy of him. I can't even believe it. This kid's just a total jerk. And he's the kind of jerk that thinks he knows everything. Ugh. He's very confidently explaining in that little confessional scene. And I was actually really glad Chloe's mom was there because she brought the voreness, the voice of reason to it. Even though it wasn't a voice, it was a look of reason. He's explaining how baby showers work. That nowadays, you know, he's a millennial, he knows better than everyone else, that baby showers are bisexual and that the moms and the dads can be there together. And Chloe's mom just looks at him like, I don't think bisexual means what you think it means, you idiot. While making some little favors or table centerpieces for this baby shower, oh God help us if it was a wedding shower, Chloe kind of expresses that she doesn't totally want Max to be there, or at least she doesn't seem opposed to the thought of Max not being there, but Max certainly wants to be there because he wants to be the open presents, and he cannot stop talking about these presents, which begs the question, how's that a financial portfolio going, money bags? Shouldn't you have enough money to not have to worry about getting the presents? Now, scenes for next week make it look like Chloe is then upset because she wants Max to be there, but I think we can all agree that it's probably because Max got in her head and is making her parents out to be the villains. Speaking of villains, can we talk about Diego and Emily? Because this kid, I want him to be one of, I don't know this, why this is coming to my head, but you know those little figures that are on a string and you press the bottom of them and their body just collapses, like the little finger toy thing? That's how I picture Diego's body, like him just standing there and I just want to push the button and his body just fall apart and then him blow away into dust. I have very dark feelings about him. I don't know why that toy came to mind, but it just seems like the most accurate portrayal of what I want to happen to his bones. Oh God, I'm like scaring myself. Okay. Okay, I get the giggles. Who? Focus, Jody. Okay. Diego's dad, Fabian. This guy I have mixed feelings about because he seems like a good guy, very supportive of Emily. He's been there for her at practices and that kind of stuff. But on the other hand, he created Diego. He is feeding this kid. He's allowing him to exist. He's allowing his bones to be together and have ligaments and joints. God, you guys, I cannot get this picture of him. Like, I picture like a little Dia de los Muertos, like a figurine from the movie Coco, but with Diego's head on it just collapsing. Okay, I might have to cut this out. Okay, hold it together. Okay, so yeah, Fabian, I have mixed feelings about. Where were we? Go, Diego, go. I want him to just fall down. I'm so sorry. Oh, okay, Diego's mom. It's very hard to read her. I think she says the right things in this episode, that Diego doesn't have to like Emily's mom, but he has to respect her. And for that, I gotta respect his mom. But again, she helped create the beast, right? She lets him get away with acting the way that he acts. She let him get away with him acting like a total asshole at the baby shower. I just gotta think, if Diego were my son, especially if we were on camera, like think about that baby shower, for example. If I keep saying wedding shower, I'm sorry. Now I'm thinking if I said wedding shower, baby shower. I got Diego bones on the brain. If it were my son at a baby shower and there were a camera around and he was acting like that, you better damn be sure that I would get us both on camera of me reaming him out for acting like a spoiled brat. I would not want judgmental people like me having a reason to call me on my parenting or my kids' behavior. It's just basic reality TV 101. Now, finally, Emily and Diego and Fabian get to this OB appointment that they were running late for. And Diego is giving the silent treatment to everyone. And then we learn why. It's because Emily's mom had mentioned the option of abortion to Emily when Emily said that she was pregnant. And now Diego will never, ever forgive her mom named Bridget because he says he knows what type of person she is. Now, if Diego were mature enough, he would realize that is actually showing what type of person he is. He is a judgmental person. He is holding grudges and he is the horrible person. But, you know, Diego thinks he knows better. I fully support Bridget in talking about all the options for Emily. Like she said, it is her daughter's body, her choices. She's obviously supporting her daughter in her choice to be pregnant and have a baby. I think Diego's just being an idiot. I think he just wanted to find some excuse to hold against Bridget, and this was just the opportunity for him to jump on and use this as his reason to be an asshole to her. Simple as that. Now let's talk about Michaela, because this is not so simple. We learn that Tim and Cindy don't like that Michaela is so impulsive. Neither do they like the basement. It's cold, it's concrete floors. We went over this last week. The wires hanging in the ceiling. The dog goes to shit in the basement. I do need to ask you kind of a question about this because I don't know if I'm the only one that doesn't know about this habit that people have or this practice that people have of letting their dog shit in the basement. I've never heard of it. I know people put litter boxes for their cats down in the basement, but I've never heard of the dog thing. I don't understand why she just can't let her dogs go outside. I live in Illinois in similar weather. I know how it works. I don't know how dogs work, but it just sounds gross to me. And it honestly sounds just kind of cruel to the animal to me. But more importantly, the basement isn't the right thing for Michaela or her son or Kaylin because, I mean, it's just unfit to be lived in by humans. Everyone knows this except Shannon, and everyone also knows that Shannon is going to lose her shit when she learns that Michaela is not going to move in. So here we go. We have Michaela, Kaylin, Tim, and Cindy. They call Shannon and they put Shannon on speaker. Shannon blows up as we all expected, and she says that she can't even afford that house. Someone should have let her know that Michaela changed her mind, even though it's the reason that they are calling her in that moment. Like, Michaela just decided they are calling you and letting you know that she changed her mind. But Shannon has the victim mentality that she always does, which is why Shannon and people that I'm sure we all know in our own lives, like Shannon, get into situations like this. If you pretend you're the victim or you have the victim mentality, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You will always be the victim of something. I agree with Tim 1,000% that Shannon should not have even rented that place if she could not afford it on her own. She shouldn't have signed the lease no matter what Michaela said. You don't depend on your daughter to pay your bills. I do feel badly that Michaela got her feelings hurt, but, you know, she does bear some blame because she did lead Shannon on. And this is what I was kind of talking about or alluding to, was it last week or the week before? Michaela is impulsive. I mean, Tim and Cindy even said the same thing this episode. She says she wants something or she wants someone to do something, but then she changes her mind and she leads people to believe one thing and then wants another and then expects something else from the person. It jacks people's emotions and expectations and perceptions up when she's constantly changing her mind. But again, Shannon still sucks. You don't depend on your kids to be paying bills. Well, that's all we got for Unexpected this week. Stick around. Coming up next, Married at First Sight. It's day 30. We are halfway through our season of Married at First Sight. Pastor Cal comes on and tells us that this week's episode is about celebrating milestones. For example, their 1 month anniversary to celebrate just how far the couples have come. Now, we start out with Bobby and Danielle, and they go clay pigeon shooting. The only time I've seen anyone do anything with pigeons, clay pigeons, guns that I enjoyed was when the Real Housewives did it. Bobby and Danielle cannot even hold a flame to them. I'm not a gun fan. I have no desire to hold a gun, shoot a gun. No, thank you. But I have to say, it was kind of cute that they were trying something new together. So good for them. Now later, Danielle arrives home from work and there's a basket from the experts. It's filled with their wedding album and invitations and framed shit, this and that. And I probably should have said this before I even started talking, but if you did not catch this latest episode of Married at First Sight, please don't bother. It is probably the most boring episode of any season of Married at First Sight that I've seen. It's not worth watching. Erase it right away from your DVR. But where was I? Okay, so they get all their wedding stuff from the experts and, you know, the usual rigmarole where they go through it and, oh, I remember he. And so they exchange their presents to each other. And as much as I was hoping Bobby would throw an Anastasia brow pencil in there, he gets Danielle a dog DNA kit and then some handwritten 3x5 note cards of things that he loves about her. She gets him a Pinteresty board and tickets to a baseball game. Again, it's really hard to really even snark on it because, number one, it's really boring. It's both things that they both like, and it was cute. But the best thing of all that I absolutely have something to say about was when Bobby says it's going to go right above the bed, talking about his baseball stadium Pinterest board thing that she made. And I was screaming, yes, put it above the bed, because I would much rather that thing than those four asymmetrically hung frames that they have hanging above their bed now. I know so many of you have seen it. I keep meaning to bring it up week after week, but there's been so much other shit between Amber's teeth and Mia's arrest. I've had other things on my mind, but that stupid, what do you want to call it, montage behind the bed, it is horrible. There's four of them, but they're like, some are going horizontal, some are going vertical, and then there's two that are completely eclipsed by the headboard, except for like the very top of the frame. It makes my OCD go on high alert. You know, I don't know why it doesn't bug Danielle. I think it bugs most women. I don't think it's going to really bother that many guys, but I don't think she's very big on home decor. There really are not many female touches on the house. Maybe she just needs more time, but the house just screams mom and dad's old furniture. Although if I had to choose, I would think it'd be better that Danielle spend some more time finding that perfect eyebrow pencil. Maybe a couple of extra minutes, hours in an Ulta. If you work at an Ulta in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, give her a little tap on the shoulder and a little, come here, girl, I gotcha, and steer her in the right direction. Now later, these two church group teenagers in love go to the drive-in and watch their wedding video in the back of Bobby's truck. Aww. Okay, let's go on to Amber and Dave. For their one-month anniversary, Amber has decided to cook Dave dinner. She's not much of a home chef, but she's decided that she's going to stay in, have a home-cooked meal together, and then she proceeds to become a disaster in the kitchen. She cannot chop vegetables. She is cross-contaminating everything with salmonella from this raw chicken. I am totally with Dave, because he noticed it too. He is taking mental notes of everything. I do the exact same thing. I know what I need to bleach later. Come Thanksgiving time, I always make my kitchen look like a crime scene. Like, I cover everything with garbage bags. Nothing from that turkey is going to make contact. And then I thoroughly clean the countertops and the sink after that, just in the rare chance that, you know, something flew and landed somewhere. So I am totally with Dave. I get it, but it was a nice gesture on Amber's part. Now for Dave, celebrating their anniversary for Amber, he wanted to take her away somewhere instead of giving her a gift. He's more into the experience than he is into an actual object. So he has decided to surprise Amber with a little trip, a little night away to where they got married. Amber's all goo-goo gaga over it, and I think she is full on falling in love. Again, very sweet gesture. He did a really good job planning it. Well done. Then it's all aboard a walk down memory lane as they walk around. Oh, shit. Forgot the name of the place. It's like Starlight Jamboree Rancho or something. I don't know, whatever it's called. And Amber's just, you know, soaking in the atmosphere. And I was feeling it. I was into it. And then she made this comment about it being so crazy to be there. All the memories are just coming back to her. It's crazy. And then she asked Dave, do you remember our first dance? And that's when, you know, snarky Jody took over. And I was like, Amber, it was only four fucking weeks ago. Okay, slow down, Celine. It's all coming back to you now. It has been, what, three weekends between. I mean, it's not like it's been months and years he's been away at sea. I think I was probably constipated after I gave birth to my first kid for that long. Okay. Not anything to be getting too excited about. But later they watch their wedding video and Amber feeds Dave some cake with those same fingernails that she was flopping around the chicken with. And Dave was trying to like choke it down. I saw him. He was like, because I saw that cake kind of caked, for lack of a better word, under her fingernails. And I know I was still thinking about that chicken dinner, so I can only imagine what he was thinking. Now let's get to Mia and Tristan. I told you, not a lot of content this week, so let's just do our best to get through the worst couple. I don't know why I don't like these two together. They seem like they're having a good time. Everyone that I see on Twitter is like, okay, yeah, she's crazy, but oh, they're happy and they're a good couple. They're going to last. I don't see it. And especially when they're starting out their anniversary week doing a risk-to-benefit analysis about moving to Houston. This is Pastor Cal's fancy word for a list of pros and cons. And again, let's remember that he gets paid for this. Ends up, Mia has all these cons for moving to Houston, but Tristan has no pros to stay where they are. So after some back and forth and some commercial breaks in there, Mia starts her baby talking that wherever you go is home. And then they decide that they're going to move because it's best for both of them. Now let's get to their anniversary day. They go on a gondola ride and it looks like it is freezing outside. And I do not feel the romance of it unless, of course, you are overseas and doing this in Venice. I mean, think about it. Some stranger standing directly behind you, hard at work, right? I mean, rowing that thing is not easy. They're listening to everything you say, everything you do. It's just super awkward to me. And also, I don't even like being on open water, and I don't think anyone could really fully relax in a boat like that. I mean, canoes, kayaks, paddle boats, this gondola, none of that. Absolutely not. For me, I know I need several feet of boat and guardrails around me. And I mean, actually, come to think of it, I think the only flotation vehicle that doesn't make me panic when I think about being on open water is a pontoon boat. I mean, I trust a pontoon boat way more than I would trust a cruise boat. I mean, those things are just vessels for diarrhea and food poisoning and even unsolved murder. Don't ever go on a cruise boat, you guys. Now, later, back at Mia and Tristan's apartment, they exchange their gifts or vows, or Tristan repeats it or something. I don't totally know because my head was spinning because Mia said something about picking each other's noses. I really hope I heard that incorrectly. I don't think I did. I don't even pick, and I never would pick, my kids' noses, nor my husband's. Ew, disgusting. I mean, I guess if they were injured or, God forbid, they were paralyzed or something, I would get one of those little sucker machine things or even like that little bulb they send you home from the hospital when you get a newborn, but never finger to nose. Nope, nope. I really, truly hope that I heard that wrong. Well, then Mia does her little nuzzling in thing, covers up her face, curls into Tristan, and then she says, oh, I have one more thing, and retrieves this giant blown up head, a picture of him that she thought was really funny, but then she just like threw it on the floor. Like, thanks for the gift. Again, I am just going to be beating a dead horse with this. These two just have a weird vibe. I don't get it. It's more flirty friends to me than it is love. Now, next week, Dr. Pepper arrives to stir the pot and give us something to talk about. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please remember, subscribe, share, tell a friend, leave a review. That's what really helps me get the word out, spread Reality TV on iTunes and all the other podcast catchers. And please talk to me, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at Reality TV Pod. And I just have to give a very special shout out to Jen, who is celebrating her 50th birthday at The Quiet Woman last weekend. It was so fun to see you and your friends celebrate together. Thank you for finding me, sending me a message. Hopefully, none of you ended up throwing plates at the end of the night. All right, guys, have a great week. I will talk to you later. Stay salty.